Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Should prosecutors be able to put people in jail for life for murders committed by somebody else? San Diego's district attorney has filed conspiracy charges against gang members using Facebook posts and rap lyrics as evidence, but the ACLU is challenging those actions on constitutional grounds. Find out more on today's show. On Green Scene, hear how one state is censoring state employees from talking about climate change, and learn about a new movie that seeks to debunk climate change deniers, so-called experts. Hear why NASA warns that California may be running out of water in just 1 year. Learn about a proposed new law that would grant renters protection to hang up clotheslines and use sunshine to dry their clothes. On Capitol Report, we'll tell you why Republicans in the House want former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton to turn over the private server that stored her emails. Plus, learn why a galactic-scale battle is brewing in Congress over funding for NASA. We'll tell you about a warning issued by SDG&E about a scam that's operating in our area. And in honor of Women's History Month, we'll tell you about an effort underway to put a woman's face on the $20 bill and how you can vote for which woman you think deserves this honor. We've got some amazing news about a dog named Hope that survived falling over 30 feet off a bridge in East County. And we'll have a story about a man bitten by a rattlesnake at Dog Beach. On the second half of our show today, our newsmaker interviews are with Chuck Brown and Roy Anthony, the president and the conductor of the San Diego Concert Band, which has its roots right here in East County. They have some exciting news to share, along with a little bit of music. Learn why people earning tips in restaurants may not be getting a raise in the minimum wage. Hear why the World Health Organization is warning young people to take precautions to prevent hearing loss. Find out about two local blood drives being held this month in East County. We'll also have an update on a lawsuit filed by environmental groups challenging Sandag's regional transportation plan, which was appealed to the California Supreme Court. We'll also have the latest on those desert wildflowers in bloom out in the Anza-Borrego Desert. Plus, we'll have details about a lawsuit over Purina's Beneful dog food, which has drawn thousands of consumer complaints of serious illnesses and pet deaths. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. San Diego District Attorney Bonnie DeMonis wants to put alleged gang members into prison, possibly for life, based largely on Facebook posts and rap music lyrics about violence that her office contends amount to benefiting off crimes committed by other people. The DA seeks to use a provision in state law to charge purported gang members for conspiracy related to over a dozen murders by Lincoln Park gang members in 2013. These include rapper Tiny Doo, whose real name is Brandon Duncan, and Aaron Harvey, a former college football player. They are not charged with murder, and they have no felony criminal records. Some of those being prosecuted contend they are not gang members and are being targeted merely for associating with people in their neighborhoods. The DA may well have strong circumstantial evidence pointing to gang membership, such as photos flashing gang symbols posted on their Facebook sites. But gang membership itself is not a crime. It effectively will be, however, if the DA has her way. The DA is seeking creative ways to halt gang violence across the region, but critics, including the American Civil Liberties Union, contend that it is unfair to assume guilt by association. In fact, the ACLU calls this prosecutors gone wild. It has asked the court to dismiss the case against Brandon Duncan. An article by David Loy on the ACLU San Diego and Imperial County's website contends that the San Diego DA's office is betraying the Constitution, the community, and the interests of justice. The ACLU contends that the DA is violating First Amendment constitutional free speech rights by targeting content of rap music, including a song about shootings, or photos with gang members and gang signs on Facebook. The DA's office went even further, however, trying to block the ACLU's right to file a brief as amicus curiae, or friend of the court. The ACLU responded by asking, is the DA afraid of the First Amendment? Some local media outlets are blasting DeMantis, too. A City Beat editorial headlined, Bonnie DeMantis' attack on freedom lambasts the DA as, quote, out of control, unquote. City Beat notes that the high-profile defendants targeted are African-American and states that the DA's office should try to avoid providing clear examples of the kind of harassment that African-Americans across the country have been experiencing. The DA is relying on Penal Code Section 182.5 to prosecute 15 San Diego men. This is apparently the first time that the statute has been used in this way to charge gang members under what amounts to guilt by association. The law was part of Proposition 21, passed by voters to crack down on crime in 2000, though there are now efforts reportedly underway to repeal Prop 21. Voice of San Diego's Sarah Libby wrote an article titled, Guilt by Association, Facebook Pics Could Help Send a Young Man to Prison for Life, about the Harvey case. Robert Weisberg, a Stanford Law School professor and co-director of the Stanford Criminal Justice Center, calls this as draconian a conspiracy law as you'll see anywhere in the United States, though he contends it's constitutional, similar to RICO laws used federally to prosecute organized crime rings. But the ACLU maintains the prosecutions may well violate the U.S. Constitution and further that the DA's effort to argue that defendants benefited off murders merely by being members of a gang that gains credibility on the streets is just too big a stretch. The DA's office has issued a statement on the controversy. It reads, in spite of media reports to the contrary, this case is not about being punished for rapping, freedom of speech, or the First Amendment. It's about using the law to prosecute a small number of the most active gang members who are responsible for the onslaught of killings and shootings that terrorized San Diego neighborhoods for months. There have been past efforts to prosecute Harvey and Duncan. Harvey beat a drug possession charge and was found not guilty. Duncan was once caught on a federal wiretap talking about how to prostitute women, the UT reports, but the matter was not prosecuted due to a jurisdictional issue. Dana Grison heads up the DA's gang prosecution unit. According to Voice of San Diego, Grison says Harvey was displaying gang signs for the Lincoln Park Bloods and posed with numerous known gang members throwing signs up for Crip Killer and Lynch Mob, subsets of that gang. Grison states it's not a guessing game. They've made it as obvious as they possibly could. Geisen contends that defendants' claims that they've never been a gang member are just not true. You look at the evidence, and it's not a close call, the prosecutor insists. But even if gang membership could be proven, should that be enough reason to lock up present or past gang members for decades or possibly even for life? Prosecutors may well have grounds for some charges, but should the sentences be as long as those for people who actually pulled the triggers at the shooting scenes? How far could guilt by association go? If an author writes a book about gang life, or a reformed gang member urges teens not to join gangs, could they be prosecuted also? These prosecutions could amount to a slippery slope, critics contend. CNN legal analyst Mark Garagos has said that San Diego's district attorney may be trying to send a message that you shouldn't glorify or glamorize gang activity. Both defendants are currently out on bail awaiting trial. Duncan already served 8 months in jail and could face 25 years to life if convicted. He contends that his lyrics were merely painting a picture of urban street life. But he has since stopped rapping because, he says, these people have you scared to do anything around here, CNN reports. Harvey had moved to Las Vegas and was studying to become a realtor when he was arrested. He has said that growing up, he was stopped over 50 times by San Diego police, often handcuffed and then released without being charged for anything. He went on to go to college on a football scholarship until a shoulder injury sidelined him, Voice of San Diego reported. Now, Harvey says, he wants to go to law school, if he can beat the rap. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
Two news stories this week revealed just how desperate some climate change deniers are to censor the public from hearing scientific facts, and how far credible scientists are now willing to go to save the planet by debunking and even censoring these phony experts. The first story sounds Orwellian doublespeak. The governor of Florida has prohibited state employees from using the terms climate change, global warming, and sustainability. Never mind that the low-lying peninsular state is vulnerable to extreme coastal flooding from rising sea levels due to polar ice melting, as the Florida Oceans and Coastal Council reported before the gag order, or that increasingly severe storms tied to climate change, according to scientists, are also forecast to wreak havoc on Floridians. Or that the National Resources Defense Council predicts that the projected heat rise from global warming in Florida will be the most dramatic in the nation. Florida's leaders and potentially other states led by climate deniers believe the public shouldn't hear about any of these perils. But now a new documentary film, Merchants, is hitting theaters across the U.S. to reach the public directly. The movie is based on a book by Harvard professor and science historian Naomi Oreskes and is plainly debunks the pseudo-experts and phony tactics being used by climate change deniers. The film is backed by eBay founder Pierre Olvidar and directed by Robert Kinner, known for his expose film Food Incorporated. The film points out parallels in the tactics used by the tobacco industry, which long denied the harmful health impacts of its products, and other industries that sought to distort truth for profit. Guess what? Some of the very same scientists who once supported the tobacco industry's position are now out shilling for the anti-climate change interests. The documentary also reveals financial ties to these phony experts to the oil industry and other businesses that profit off fossil fuels and thus have a vested interest in lying to cover up truths that could harm their bottom line. Despite 95% consensus in the scientific community and virtually 100% among scientists not paid by the oil industry and its think tanks, the Republican Party has adamantly opposed action to reverse climate change and further moderate Republicans who dared to speak out and say they believe that climate change is real and man-made were confronted with challengers in primary races and unseated. Climate change deniers, unable to use logic since the evidence overwhelmingly proves the rapid escalation of climate change, often resort to arguing that policies to reduce greenhouse gas emissions are against free market values. If you regulate tobacco or restrict use of carbon-based fuels, the argument goes, you're on a slippery slope towards tyranny and elimination of personal choice. Never mind that it was conservative George W. Bush who first proposed carbon emissions trading or that Democrats initially opposed the idea. But when it was tried and worked, the two parties switched positions. Now, with credible experts on climate change warning that it may soon be irreversible, if action is not taken, potentially turning our planet into a place not fit for human habitation, the consequences of ignoring the facts could not be more dire. Oreskes blames the media for giving equal time to some phony experts, lending credibility to debunking claims. Sometimes the evidence and the data are all on one side, Oreskes observes. A petition has been launched asking the media to stop giving airtime to climate change deniers. The film's director argues that people who mislead the public on climate change should not be on TV, period. Critics of the film and the petition might argue that this would be censorship, the very thing environmentalists have accused Florida of doing. But there is a key difference. Florida's governor is censoring scientific findings backed by reams of documented studies and the world's top climatologists. Advocates of journalistic integrity are asking that media do a better job of vetting so-called experts. After all, reputable media outlets already refuse to give airtime to people making ludicrous claims on other issues such as Holocaust deniers or people who claim the moon landings were staged in a Hollywood back lot, or members of the Flat Earth Society who insist that the world is not round.
California could run out of water in a year as reservoirs run dry and groundwater resources are overpumped. That's the dire warning of Jay Famiglietti, senior water scientist at the NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory, Caltech. In an editorial just published in the Los Angeles Times, the NASA water expert states, "We're not just up a creek without a paddle in California, we're losing the creek, too." He calls on state officials to implement immediate water rationing and take other steps to preserve the state's shrinking water resources. January of this year was the driest January since the state started keeping records back in 1895. After several years of record drought, groundwater and snowpack levels are at all-time lows. NASA images taken in January 2013 and January 2014, that's a year ago, show dramatic shrinkage of snowpacks and water resources, although those images don't account for recent rainfall in the past winter, which other NASA images show have temporarily greened some portions of the state. but it's just not enough. Still, other NASA satellite images reveal that statewide, water has dropped 12 million acre feet since 2011, with two-thirds of those losses due to groundwater pumping at farms in the Central Valley, where the federal government has cut off all or nearly all water allocations. Those pumping rates are unsustainable, and the wells are running dry. Some farmland in the Central Valley is sinking by a foot a year or more. NASA images also reveal that water stored in the Sacramento and San Joaquin River basins was 34 million acre-feet below normal last year. NASA's top water scientist wants the state to speed up implementation of the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act of 2014, which currently could take 30 years to implement. He also calls for mandatory statewide water rationing and urges the public to take ownership of this issue by demanding transparency in water policies. A recent field poll shows 94% of Californians do believe the drought is serious, and a third would support mandatory rationing. That may happen very soon. The Sacramento Bee reports that the State Water Resources Control Board meets this Tuesday and will consider a proposal to restrict landscape watering, which accounts for 70% of all urban watering in our state. The board is expected to order all urban water agencies in California to restrict outdoor watering to only certain days of the week for both residential and business customers, perhaps as little as 2 days a week in some places. Running irrigation for 48 hours after measurable rainfall would also be banned. These steps would be unprecedented, more sweeping than any prior mandate even during the last major drought back in 1977. But state residents are not doing enough on their own. Californians lowered their water use less than 9% over the past 2 years, from January 2013 to January of this year. And it won't be just big water agencies impacted. The order, if approved by the state, is expected for the first time to include 2,500 small water providers that serve less than 3,000 customers each, and it would require them to reduce water use by 20%. Consumers who fail to comply could pay huge fines of $500 per violation per day. Now, if you need help to conserve, such as finding the manuals for your irrigation timer that you might have lost, you can visit SaveOurWater.com. The state's water board is also looking to implement a water waste hotline for people to report wasteful water consumption. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
A new bill leaves California renters hanging out to dry by legalizing the use of clotheslines. A generation or two ago, air-drying freshly washed clothing was commonplace. Neighbors chatted over the fence while snapping clothespins to hang up damp laundry, and sometimes gossiped over racy lingerie or voluminous trousers left swaying in the breeze. But in recent years, some landlords have restricted the use of clotheslines for aesthetic reasons. Now Assembly Bill 1448, introduced by Assemblywoman Patty Lopez of San Fernando, would classify clotheslines as solar energy systems, since they rely on sunshine to dry garments instead of gas or electric dryers that rely on fossil fuels that contribute to greenhouse gas emissions. If the measure passes, landlords won't be able to ban clotheslines, and renters seeking to save energy can air dry their laundry freely. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. House Speaker John Boehner plans to launch a congressional investigation into the controversy surrounding former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's emails, ABC News reports. Clinton did not use an official government email account, sending all of her emails through her own private server while she was Secretary of State. She and her staff have turned over 55,000 pages of emails to the State Department for archiving after being requested to do so. But the former First Lady and likely presidential candidate has drawn criticism after revelations that she deleted over 30,000 emails that she claims were personal from her years heading up the State Department. Federal officials, by law, are supposed to retain all public records for posterity, and while use of private email is not illegal, it has more commonly been used only occasionally, not exclusively. Clinton's actions raise questions over whether official documents or evidence could have been destroyed, as well as whether security of diplomatic communications could have been compromised. Republicans want Clinton to turn her server over to an independent arbiter. Congressman Trey Gowdy, chair of the House Select Committee on Benghazi, wants to see subpoenas issued for Clinton's emails on that topic. The House Oversight Committee Chairman Jason Chaffetz has suggested that his panel could subpoena Clinton if she is not cooperative in the investigation. While there are legitimate issues of concern, some Democrats have voiced concern that the Republican-controlled House could have a partisan agenda to tarnish Clinton's reputation, since she is considered the front-runner for the Democratic presidential nomination in 2016. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery. Should NASA focus less of its money on planet Earth and more on distant stars and galaxies? That's an argument of galactic proportions that's shaping up in Congress. NASA has requested a 3% increase in its budget for the next year, seeking $18.5 billion total. Of that, only a little more than 10% is slated to go toward Earth science programs, such as satellites to monitor storms and climate changes, while 90% goes for space-oriented projects. Republican leaders who don't believe in global climate change want NASA's focus to shift toward more space exploration and not projects here on Earth. Senator Cory Gardner, a Republican from Texas, asks, "Are we focusing on the heavens in NASA or are we focusing on dirt in Texas?" But scientists are backing NASA. Christine McGinty, head of the American Geophysical Union, has written that Earth science within NASA provides a broad array of benefits and applications across the public and private sectors. For example, NASA has helped with the Deepwater Horizon Gulf oil spill in 2010. NASA satellites help track hurricanes, shrinking polar ice caps, and even water levels in California. Those problems aren't getting any smaller, despite some congressional members' desire to shrink the budget for studying these earthly concerns.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is Leon Thompson with a warning for consumers from San Diego Gas and Electric Company. SDG&E is alerting customers to be aware of people posing as utility employees asking to enter a customer's home. It's been reported that one imposter will distract unsuspecting customers while performing routine inspections, while another imposter burglarizes the home. SDG&E says its employees carry identification when called out to any job. The company warns customers to verify that the employee is wearing the proper uniform and identification badge before letting anyone in your home. Also, be sure that they have a clearly marked SDG&E company vehicle. If you are suspicious, call SDG&E at 800-411-7343 to ensure that work is currently being conducted in your area. SDG&E does often hire contractors to complete smart meter work or provide information on energy efficiency programs. However, contractors will never ask customers to leave their home for any reason and also carry proper identification. If asked to leave your home, don't do it. Here are some additional tips to keep in mind should you receive a phone call from someone posing as an SDG&E representative. Although there have not been recent reports of this fraudulent activity, SDG&E wants to alert individuals and businesses of this type of fraud through all communications channels, including direct mailers, in an effort to prevent them from becoming potential victims. SDG&E does not proactively contact customers and ask for credit card information over the phone. SDG&E customers should not provide any financial information by phone unless they have initiated the conversation. SDG&E provides past due notices in writing before service is shut off for non-payment. If customers receive a phone call that makes them feel uncomfortable and they know they have an outstanding balance that needs to be resolved, they should hang up and call SDG&E directly at 800-411-7343.
A woman's place is on the money. That's the slogan of a new group called WomenOn20s.org, which has launched a national campaign to put a woman's face on the $20 bill. They've launched an online petition drive seeking to convince President Obama to replace the image of Andrew Jackson, instead putting a woman on the bill to honor the upcoming 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment, which gave women the right to vote. The group has also launched an online poll to let the American public choose which woman most deserves the honor of being the first female face on paper currency. Other bills feature images of George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, Alexander Hamilton, and Benjamin Franklin. Andrew Jackson, a former president, is viewed as most suited to be removed from the honor of having his image on our money, since he was responsible for ordering the removal of Cherokee Indians off their land, an action that resulted in the deaths of 4,000 Cherokee people on what has become known as the Trail of Tears. U.S. law requires that only someone who has died can appear on U.S. currency. WomenOn20s.org has proposed 15 candidates. They include Susan B. Anthony, a leader in both the abolition and women's suffrage movements,
She braved arrest for daring to cast a vote and campaigning for the successful passage of the 19th Amendment, giving women across America the right to vote. Anthony has previously been honored with her image on a dollar coin. Clara Barton, known as the Angel of the Battlefield, was a nurse who brought medical care to soldiers on the front lines during the Civil War. She later led national efforts to find soldiers missing in action and went on to found the American Red Cross. Rachel Carson, author of the book Silent Spring, exposed the dangers of pesticides, launching the environmental movement and leading to creation of the Environmental Protection Agency and a ban on DDT. Shirley Chisholm, the first African-American woman elected to Congress and first majority party black candidate for president, was also a strong advocate for minorities, women, and children on Capitol Hill. Betty Friedan was the author of The Feminine Mystique, and she also founded the National Organization for Women, serving as its first president. Barbara Jordan, the first African-American from the South elected to Congress, was also the first African-American to deliver a keynote speech at the Democratic National Convention. Patsy Mink was the first Asian-American in Congress, and she helped lead efforts to pass Title IX, legislation that ended sex discrimination in education and opened up collegiate sports opportunities for women. Rosa Parks refused to give up her bus seat to a white man, launching civil rights protests and helping to bring about passage of the Civil Rights Act. She has been hailed as a symbol in the struggle for racial equality. Alice Paul, whose 10-year campaign to win women the right to vote included a hunger strike, was a lawyer and social worker who also headed the National Women's Party for 50 years. Frances Perkins served as U.S. Labor Secretary under President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the first female cabinet member in American history. She introduced the Social Security Act, the Conservation Corps, the Public Works Administration, the minimum wage, the 40-hour workweek, and laws outlawing child labor. Eleanor Roosevelt, First Lady and wife of President Franklin D. Roosevelt, used her newspaper column, radios, and speeches to champion women's rights and civil rights, sometimes in opposition to her husband's policies. Later a delegate to the United Nations, she drafted a Universal Declaration of Human Rights and was nicknamed First Lady of the World. Margaret Sanger opened the first birth control clinic in America. Sanger was arrested and tried for her efforts to help women avoid unwanted pregnancies, later helping to legalize contraception and found Planned Parenthood. Elizabeth Cady Stanton was a founder of the women's rights movement, convening the 1848 Seneca Falls Convention. She inspired the suffrage movement with her words, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men and women are created equal." Sojourner Truth, an escaped slave who traveled widely, advocated for abolition and women's rights back in the 19th century. Harriet Tubman, a slave who fled to freedom in the North, later made 19 trips back to the South as a leader on the Underground Railroad, leading over 300 slaves to freedom. She also served as a nurse, a scout, and a spy for the Union Army, as well as a leader in the women's suffrage movement after the war. You can cast your vote on which of these remarkable women you would like to see on the $20 bill at www.womenon20s.org.
This is Leon Thompson with a story about Hope. A dog that fell 30 to 40 feet off a bridge in Lemon Grove is recovering and will soon be up for adoption. The 5-year-old mixed breed was running loose on State Route 125 on February 28th when she jumped off the bridge. People below tried to catch her, but she suffered a severely fractured hind leg and a collapsed lung. A county animal control officer took the dog to an emergency veterinary hospital. The next day, she was x-rayed at the county's animal care facility in Bonita, where her injuries were diagnosed. The dog, aptly named Hope, was transferred to a veterinary hospital where her injuries were treated, thanks to a $5,000 donation from the department's Spirit Fund. Hope recovered enough to return to the county animal shelter, and on Friday the 13th, she was transferred to It's the Pits Rescue, which is caring for Hope as she continues to recover. The animal rescue group posted on its Facebook page, "She is doing very well, but has a long road ahead." The group aspires to place Hope up for adoption and find her a forever home in the near future.
If you're heading to the beach to escape this unseasonable heat wave, there's something more you should worry about besides slathering on sunscreen. A man at Dog Beach in the Ocean Beach area was bitten by a baby rattlesnake on Saturday. East County hikers and outdoor enthusiasts have long known to watch out for rattlers when the weather warms up and the snakes come out of hibernation. But in recent years, snake bites have been occurring even in some central San Diego and coastal communities, and now even on the sandy shore of a local beach. Can hiking sticks for beachgoers be far behind? This victim, however, was bitten not on the foot, but on the hand, so keep an eye out not merely while strolling down your favorite beach or trail, but also while sunbathing, too. It's a good idea to keep your dog on a leash, since a rattlesnake bite can cost thousands of dollars in veterinary treatments. If you are bitten by a rattler, prompt medical attention is crucial, since rattlesnake poison is life-threatening if anti-venom is not administered. KUSI reports that the dog beach snake bite victim was taken to a local hospital. As for the baby rattlesnake, it was killed by another beachgoer. But where there's one baby snake, others are likely nearby. So if you're heading to the beach or anywhere outdoors, be sure to watch where you step. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. The East County Magazine show airs Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com. The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, my very special guests are two representatives from the San Diego Concert Band. We have with us Chuck Brown, president and founding member, and the conductor, Roy Anthony. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Now, the San Diego Concert Band has been around a long time. Chuck, can you start by giving us a little bit of history about how the band got started?
The band was originally formed in 1989 in La Mesa, and it had full sponsorship by Grossmont Center and the city of La Mesa for several years. But as the economy went the wrong direction, the band became independent, and unlike many other community bands in San Diego, we are not supported or funded by an educational institution or another similar type of organization. Since 1989, we've had quite a series of local celebrities as our MCs for the shows. Kingsley McLaren, who's now with XLNC, was our first ever MC for our concert, which was at Grossmont High School. Mm-hmm. We expected family and friends, and we had to hold up the concert because over 800 people showed up, which made the news in La Mesa Press as well as San Diego. Others have been Larry Himmel. Pat Brown has been a staunch member. She did a feature on the band with her PM Magazine show back when she had the half-hour series in the 70s. We made her an honorary founding member because of that. Carol LeBeau, Joe Cookerhands, and currently Mark Larson is going to be our MC at our upcoming concert.
And that concert, by the way, is going to be on April 7th at the Croc Center, and we're going to be telling you all about that, listeners, in just a little bit. So tell us a little bit more about the background of the band.
The band currently has about 96 members from all walks of life, some working, some not. A large number of our players are retirees. I am an information technology career professional and CIO. We have music educators, physicians, auto mechanics.
All kinds of musicians.
And the band currently is performing at Kroc Theater, which is sellout crowds most every time. We play two formal concerts there, one in the holiday season, and our upcoming concert in April as a spring concert. In addition, we do a joint fundraiser with the Water Conservation Garden in Rancho San Diego. We started that 2 years ago, and it's been very successful for both the band and the garden for community awareness as well as fundraising. And we perform a full series of summer concerts, sometimes two a month, and they're free concerts in various parks around the county. And we play at music festivals in Poway and Temecula.
Very good. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing some of those. Now, speaking of retired educators, Roy, I understand that you have just received a major honor. You were named the best retired music educator in California. Tell us who presented that and a little bit of background. I know listeners, for those of you from East County, many of you may have been taught by Roy in some of our local schools.
Well, thank you very much. I was surprised when the CMEA, the California Music Educators Association, contacted me and told me that they would like to present this award in February. I retired from teaching in 2004, but I continue to work with schools every week. I love it. I think once you're a teacher, you just can't walk away. At least I can't walk away from it. I enjoy doing it immensely. Mm-hmm. I taught in two local high schools. I was at Mount McGill High School for 11 years, and then my last years were at Valhalla High School in Rancho San Diego. I taught there for 8 years before retiring. Since then, I also spent 2 years filling in as an adjunct professor at Point Loma Nazarene University.
And now you're the conductor of the San Diego Concert Band, and I understand that last year's concert, spring concert, featured your son, Ryan, who is also a graduate of Mount McGill High School.
Yeah, that was a very exciting time for me. It was our 25th anniversary concert with the San Diego Concert Band. And we had discussed what type of concert and who to have as a special guest, and we were all in agreement it would be good to have my son come in.
Who had just been through a major medical ordeal, I understand, and this was really a triumphant moment. Tell us about that.
Yes, in 2012, he was diagnosed with multiple myeloma, which is an incurable cancer, and it was quite a shock to all of us. And there is, for a long time, we didn't even know if he would ever be able to play his trumpet again. And he's in complete remission now and doing wonderful. He plays principal trumpet with the Dallas Symphony, also does traveling throughout the states, doing a lot of solo work. So we're very thankful for that. And he came in and we had a sellout. We did two concerts back to back, and he did great. He performed seven numbers on each concert. It was great for a lot of the alumni from Mount McGill High School where he graduated. They were all there and had their little cheering section.
And I understand you had an interesting finale for that.
Yes, it was. The theme song for Mount McGill is La Virgen de la Macarena. And during the applause at the end of the concert, he started that up from the back of the hall. And Mount McGill alumni went crazy.
I'll bet they did. Well, congratulations, and it's wonderful to hear that he's doing so well. And we should mention, we understand he was a recipient of stem cell transplant that helped him to overcome the cancer and go into remission.
Yes, in May he underwent stem cell transplant, and it was very, very successful. They had told him it'd be about 6 months before he could play his trumpet, but he recuperated so well that 1 month from the day of his transplant, he was sitting back with the Dallas Symphony playing his trumpet again, the lead trumpet.
Yeah, that's amazing. And you told me the cancer was in 80% of his bones before that.
Yeah, it was 80%. He did not tell me that originally. I found that out and I asked him about it, and he goes, "I didn't want to worry you, Dad."
Yeah, sure.
So when I heard that, it was just, it made it even more exciting and an added blessing.
Now, you have just come back from joining your son in Dallas, where I understand you helped out on something called the Cancer Blows Concert, raising money to combat cancer with cancer research.
Yeah, that started when he was diagnosed with multiple myeloma. He received a phone call from Doc Severinsen, who Ryan had been a friend with for a number of years.
Yeah, and famous trumpet player.
Doc was talking to him and said, "What can I do for you?" And Ryan says, "I want to be able to be on the stage with you one more time." Excuse me. And so that started the ball rolling, and many other trumpeters contacted him and said, we would like to do it also. So for a year and a half, he's been planning this concert. It started off being a one-night event, but it ended up being three nights. The opening night, they had every principal trumpet player from all the leading symphonies, Chicago, New York, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Atlanta, and I can't remember all of them, but they were all there performing together. And then it climaxed on Wednesday with the big concert with the Dallas Symphony playing the first half, and it was more classical-oriented. People like Phil Smith and Alan Vizzuti and Vince DiMartino. The second half was the jazz half, and that featured Arturo Sandoval with Wycliffe Gordon, rather, on trombone, Marvin Stamm, a jazz trumpeter, and climaxed with Doc Severinsen.
What an amazing lineup and a marvelous experience. Now, I understand that you did the video portion of this and that there is a music video that's going to be coming out very soon.
Yes, I was in the truck during the concert calling the camera shots, and it was exciting for me to be a part of this event. And the event was in order to raise awareness for cancer research and raising money for cancer research.
And if people want to get that music video, where will it be available?
In about 3 or 4 weeks, you'll find it posted. If you go to the cancerblows.com website, cancerblows.com, you can order a video, a DVD, and also a CD will be available.
Very good. With all those famous trumpet players, and also have the money go for a very worthy cause, which is fighting cancer. Speaking of videos, Chuck, I understand that the San Diego Concert Band may have their music featured in another major video, or rather a motion picture.
That's right, Miriam. About 6 months ago, sometime last early fall, Roy was contacted by an Italian movie company that is very well known for its in-country documentaries. They've done several documentaries focusing on an aspect of some particular country, including a couple in the U.S. And they're planning to do a video for the 150th birthday celebration of Edgar Lee Masters, the poet and dramatist. Mm. And one of the pieces that they wanted to include is called Shenandoah. It's a very popular ballad. And they contacted us to see if we could provide the music for them. They said they reviewed over 80 YouTube clips from all kinds of organizations, professional and amateur, who had recorded versions of Shenandoah, and they picked ours.
Very impressive. And congratulations.
Currently in negotiation between the movie company and the music publisher for rights to provide the performance as part of their movie.
Well, that's very exciting. And speaking of exciting, I understand that the San Diego Concert Band is going after another big award, this time a national one for Sousa music. Tell us a little bit about that.
It's an award done by the John Philip Sousa Foundation, which has many, many different avenues for musicianship. For instance, there's the John Philip Sousa Award, which is done predominantly in high school bands for the outstanding musician of any particular year. There are other awards, and their community band and orchestra track has an award for musical excellence by community bands. And it's a long process. We're on a 5-year course that by the end of 2016 we'll probably be able to apply for the award. It requires a lot of documentation and work for about 5 years worth of performances by a particular band, including a demonstration CD of the music that we performed. And the selection is done totally in the blind. The judges do not know the name of the band that's performing for their award.
Well, very interesting.
It's an interesting award because it's not one of those you win and everybody else loses. They can award none or several Sudler Silver Scroll Awards to concert bands, all based on the quality of the performance and documentation provided by the particular band.
Well, we certainly wish you well on that. And listeners, we thought it would be a treat today to play a little excerpt for you from one of those Sousa marches. So we're going to play a little bit of the Liberty Bell March performed by the San Diego Concert Band. And this is off of their America the Beautiful CD. So put on your marching shoes, listeners, and listen up. that was wonderful. I'm still tapping my toes. Now, if people want to come hear more of the San Diego Concert Band, tell us a little bit about what's coming up at your 26th annual Spring Celebration Concert, which I understand is going to be on Tuesday, April 7th at 7 o'clock at the Joan Kroc Performing Arts Center.
Yes, this is entitled the Springtime Classics, and it's a little different. Our summer programs are all pop-oriented. This is going to be sort of band classics with marches, a couple of the overtures, Overture to Candide, which is a very popular one by Leonard Bernstein, the finale to Shostakovich's Fifth Symphony, which is a nice, big, heavy piece. And yeah, it's exciting for us to be able to put these musicians together and play this level of music. So we're looking forward to it.
It sounds marvelous, and I see that the agenda also includes some Verdi and some Wagner, several other works as well, including a world premiere arrangement for clarinet, quintet, and band featuring the San Diego Clarinet Quintet.
Yeah, we're very excited to have them as part of the concert this year. They're going to do a couple numbers by themselves, and then there is this world premiere of a number with the quintet and the band together.
Very exciting. Now, if people want to get tickets or more information about the concert or about the San Diego Concert Band, where can they go?
We have a website, sandiegoconcertband.com, and it has information about the upcoming concert and also all of our concerts and the dates and times during the summer, various locations throughout the community.
Well, fantastic. We'll also be listing those concerts on our calendar at eastcountymagazine.org.
In addition, if your listeners want to have a chance to hear some of our previous performances, there are excerpts from the last two or three years' worth of spring and holiday concerts there, including a little section of Shenandoah.
Very good. I look forward to listening to that myself. Well, I want to thank both of you so much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
This is a public service announcement from East County Magazine. The San Diego Blood Bank wants your blood to help save lives. The Blood Bank will be accepting donations this month at two locations in East County. The first blood drive will be held at El Cajon Valley High School on March 24th from 8:30 to 2 p.m. in the dance room. The second is at Soup Plantation's parking lot in La Mesa on Saturday, March 28th from 11 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. All donors are awarded a free meal pass coupon courtesy of Soup Plantation. Donors must be 17 or older, weigh at least 114 pounds, and be in good health. A good meal and plenty of fluids are recommended prior to blood donation. All donors must show photo identification. Donors are encouraged to schedule an appointment by calling 1-800-4-MY-SANDIEGO-BLOODBANK or 469-7322 or visit sandiegobloodbank.org.
Here's a tip. If you're a waiter or waitress who earns a lot from tips, you might be left out of the upcoming minimum wage increase if a bill backed by the California Restaurant Association wins approval in the state legislature. Next year, California's minimum wage will rise to $10 an hour. But Assembly Bill 669, authored by Assemblyman Tom Daley, would mandate that restaurant employees who earn $15 or more when tips are added to their base income will have their wages capped at $9 an hour. The bill is opposed by the United Food and Commercial Workers. The union's executive director, James Araby, says the measure would undermine the spirit of raising the minimum wage. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Marilyn Lyons with a health report that may not be music to your ears. The World Health Organization, or WHO, reports that over a billion teenagers and young adults are at risk of losing their hearing. WHO studied listening habits of people aged 12 to 35 around the world and found that nearly 50% listen on personal audio devices at sound levels that can damage hearing, and about 40% are exposed to harmful levels of music and other sound at entertainment venues such as sports bars and nightclubs. Besides hearing loss, people can also suffer ringing in the ears. In about half of the people with hearing loss, the damage was avoidable, not tied to age, genetics, or disease. WHO has launched the Make Listening Safe initiative. It asks manufacturers to create audio safety features and teach consumers how to use them. Hu also suggests that parents, teachers, and doctors educate young people on safe listening habits and that entertainment venues set safe noise level limits, as well as offering earplugs and chill-out rooms for customers. Hu is also urging governments to establish and enforce laws that would restrict noise in recreational venues. Here are a few tips to help save your hearing. Turn the volume down to 60% or less. Wear noise-canceling earbuds, or better yet, headphones. Take listening breaks or restrict listening to only an hour a day. Download a smartphone app to help measure safe listening levels. And finally, if you visit a loud bar, nightclub, concert, or sports event, use ear protection devices such as headphones to help save your hearing.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. California's Supreme Court has agreed to review part of a closely watched environmental case that could have broad implications for transportation planning throughout the state. Cleveland National Forest Foundation versus the San Diego Association of Governments aims to determine whether SANDAG complied with the California Environmental Quality Act when analyzing impacts of SANDAG's 2050 Regional Transportation Plan and Sustainable Communities Strategy on climate change. Now, both the Superior and the Appellate Courts agreed that the San Diego Area Planning Agency failed to fully assess and mitigate against climate risks associated with its plan, which invests heavily in freeways and subsidizes sprawl at the expense of public transit, according to the critics. The High Court will consider whether environmental review of regional transportation plans must include an analysis of the plan's consistency with statewide goals for greenhouse gas emission reductions. An order by Governor Schwarzenegger had set targets for reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. But environmentalists argued that SANDAG's plan would dramatically increase greenhouse gas emissions by building more freeways before mass transit, just the opposite of what the state intended. There were several important issues in the case that were resolved by the Court of Appeals and were not taken up by the California Supreme Court. That means that as a result, under the Court of Appeals holding, SANDAG will be required to develop stronger mitigation for climate impacts associated with its plan, complete a more rigorous analysis of the plan's air quality, public health, and agricultural impacts, and develop a full range of alternatives, including options that would reduce driving in the region. This is the first case in which the California Supreme Court will consider the implications of SB 375, a state law aimed at reducing greenhouse gas emissions through transportation planning. SANDAG was the first regional government in the state to develop a sustainable communities strategy and regional transportation plan under SB 375. The Cleveland National Forest Foundation, the Sierra Club, the Center for Biological Diversity, and two community groups all sued SANDAG over its approach, noting that under the agency's plan, regional greenhouse gas emissions would increase dramatically by 2050. State Attorney General Kamala Harris intervened in the case in support of the petitioners. Rachel Hooper is the managing partner of Shoot, Milhaley & Weinberger, the law firm representing Cleveland National Forest and Sierra Club in this case. She says, "We are pleased that the Supreme Court let stand the vast majority of the Court of Appeals decision. This case has important ramifications for whether or not California will ultimately achieve its greenhouse gas emissions reduction goals." She adds, "We are hopeful that the court will agree that regional transportation agencies must assess their plan's conformity to state climate policy. Without such requirements, it will be difficult for California to reduce its long-term contributions to climate change," the lawyer concludes. Jack Hsu, president of the Cleveland National Forest Foundation, has this to say. "This week, the California Supreme Court affirmed the appellate court's findings that SANDAG misinformed and misled the public and public officials in their 2050 regional transportation plan. Now he asks whether or not elected officials will make significant changes to how we approach transportation in the San Diego region. Will they make changes which will not just address people and goods movement from place to place," he asks, "but also provide the maximum benefits to our public health, quality of life in communities, regional economy, agricultural lands, open space, and overall environment."
And the Borrego Desert wildflowers are both beautiful and fragile. Some of the best wildflowers displays in years were reported just days ago along DiGiorgio Road. But now a natural predator has moved in droves, Voracious caterpillars are chomping down these delicate blooms and may next feast on blossoms along Henderson Canyon Road. The Anza Borrego Desert Park website reported on Monday, the advance of the caterpillars means that our big fields of flowers will not be around much longer. The flowers that existed on Giorgio Road a week ago are now entirely gone due to the caterpillars. But it's not all bad news. These caterpillars will soon undergo a metamorphosis, turning into white-linked sphinx moths, commonly known as hummingbird moths, and the moths help pollinate the flower fields for future growth. The moths are also a favorite delicacy of migrating swains and hawks, which have swooped into Anza Borrego and are now reportedly gorging on caterpillars. Fortunately, you can still see desert wildflowers in some other nearby locations. For details, you can visit the Anza Borrego Desert State Park website or call the state wildflower hotline at 760-767-4684. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is Miriam Raftery with some important news for dog owners. California Senator Dianne Feinstein wants to know why the Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, has not taken action to halt the sale of Purina Beneful dog food. The products remain on the market despite numerous complaints and now a lawsuit claiming that thousands of dogs were sickened or died after eating the dry kibble food. Senator Feinstein also asks why most provisions of a pet food safety law passed by Congress back in 2008, that's 7 years ago, have still not been implemented. As we reported recently, the lawsuit claims that Nestle Purina Pet Care's Beneful dog food contains dangerous toxins, including an ingredient found in antifreeze. A dog owner who filed the class action suit contends that all three of his dogs fell ill after eating the food and one of them died. The suit claims that ailments tied to this dog food include internal bleeding, liver and kidney failure, vomiting, diarrhea, bloat, and weight loss, as well as death. Senator Feinstein, along with Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois, sent a letter to the FDA calling for an investigation. While their letter praised the FDA for establishing a database that's searchable by consumers and veterinarians, the senators also criticized the agency for turning a blind eye to numerous complaints. To put it frankly, the letter concludes, the food safety system Congress fought to develop has not been put in place by the FDA. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Royalty Free Music, Kevin McLeod, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.